We were discussing this thing called maturity yesterday. Maturity comes when we are awake and alert. Perhaps one gained the impression from yesterday's discussion that that's all. If I am awake, if I am alert, if I can see the substance as substance and the shadow as shadow, that's all. I have attained enlightenment, I have attained Sattori, I have attained God realization, self realization, all sorts of things, everything put together. What more? What must I do anything more? Why must I do anything more? I know what is truth to be truth. I know what is untruth to be untruth. Is there anything more to do? What must I do? That's all. When one comes to this state of a correct understanding of substance as substance, shadow as shadow, truth as truth, falsehood as falsehood, without a confusion between the two, one has arrived at virtue. Virtue is not bluffing oneself that I am on the seventh state. Virtue is honesty. Truthfulness is not speaking the truth. That's a very small affair, minor affair. Speaking the truth is a very terribly minor affair. Being aware of the truth, that's a lot more difficult. When I open my eyes, am I seeing what is in front of me? Or am I projecting what I would like it to be or like it not to be? It's a constant battle. Constant battle. A reason why we don't enjoy life even. It's one of those unfortunate things. We are so terribly, dreadfully caught in our own image of what the world should be, of what I shall be, of what you shall be. That I don't enjoy anything. If you are eating a cake, wishing that it were sweeter, you don't enjoy the sweetness of the existent cake. If you are constantly living, thinking, looking at your wife and saying, I wish you were like so and so, so and so. You don't know how beautiful she is. Your own image is destroying the reality. So destroy that image first. That is what I believe the Ten Commandment implied. Not that I shouldn't have an image like this here. Those images are dreadful things, terrible things. Terrible things which completely destroy our life. Not only the so-called spiritual life, but even our sensuous life. I am constantly wishing you are somebody else. You are constantly wishing I was somebody else. I am constantly wishing I am all right as I am. Perfectly all right. Quite satisfied. I am either comparing myself with you or comparing myself with my own blessed self 25 years ago. Impossible, nonsense. Why must I relive those 25 years ago? I have done it already once, twice, three times. I wish to compare myself with this gentleman. He is younger, he is more robust, and he is more successful. I don't know what this successful means. And therefore I am frustrated. I am quite happy now. I am very successful in life. As successful as I can, I can be. I am quite happy. I am fighting. Yes, I am fighting. But I don't want to wish. I don't wish to be anybody else at all. Jaya took me to the zoo. I came from there some time ago. I saw a gorilla sitting there. I thought, I can see. Some time ago, I was sitting there and they came to look at me. And I looked at them and said, "You silly fools, I don't come to look at you. What do you come to look at me?" That's all over. It's all right. I am what I am now. That is where it. I am what I am. What am I? The honesty or realization of the truth. Is not merely being honest in our dealings with others, but honestly looking at others, honestly looking it into oneself. What prevents me from looking honestly at others? And honestly within myself. Personality conflict, isn't it? Huh? That's probably a big expression, personality conflict. All that it means, please cultivate this habit of looking into the root meaning of words, not getting caught in interpretative definitions. Personality conflict means, what does it mean? Conflict of personalities. But you know what persona means, personality means? Persona means a mask. Personality conflict means conflict of masks, clashing of masks. I have a certain image of you. You have a certain image of me. You took one good look at me and, well, maybe... Come a little closer. He's a good chap, but started trouble. First time you saw me, you created an image, a mask, and that mask appeared to you to be good. Look at this complication. When you came to see me first time, You made an image. I have been what I am. I didn't change. You made an image of me and you thought, ah, he's a good chap. Wonderful man, right? And then you came a little closer. You saw, you know, a crack in your own mask. May not be a crack in me, the crack in your own mask, the image that you built of me. And, well, he's a good man, but the but has come. When the but comes into the personality, a few buts, it gets broken. That is called the personality conflict. A man who is honest, a man who is alert, makes no images at all. And he looks for the truth. Truth in you, truth in him. What is this image here that is trying to look at that image there as Indra Devi said just now? Unless I know what colored lens I am wearing, I cannot know what colored dress he is wearing. My lens is constantly distorting the vision. And in order to have observation without distortion, which is meditation, which is satori, which is enlightenment, all sorts of wonderful things. In order to have this observation without distortion, I must know what kind of lens is there. What is this me? What is this personality mask that I am wearing? What is this personality here, sitting here? Thereby hangs a big snag. Thereby hangs a terrible snag. I am awake, I am alert. I can see that the world outside me is nothing but my own wishful thinking and manias and phobias projected. So, if I am alert, if I am awake, I am going to use a rather meaningless expression. I try not to project these images, which is never possible. Sooner or later, I begin to wonder, what is this personality that is projecting something all the time? And if I say, I am aware of that personality, I am caught. Who is aware of what personality? Isn't one mask studying another mask within me? Telling, ah, what a good chap you are, right? Lovely. When I say, I am studying myself, when I say, I am observing myself, I have already split myself into two, the observer and the observed. Are there two personalities within me, schizophrenia? Or am I one personality, merely bluffing myself, that I am observing myself? As, in other words, when somebody sits and says, I am not thinking at all. I am meditating. I am not thinking at all. You know what is happening? He is thinking that he is not thinking. Good. Wonderful expression. When you come up and say, I am not thinking,
What does it imply? It implies that you have been sitting and thinking, I am not thinking. Which is a remarkable thing, wonderful thing. Nice. You know why? Because you have been able to zero in to this one single thought of I am not thinking. Very nice. No harm. But so long as this dishonest thought that I am not thinking is there, it is going to bring in any number of thoughts in a few minutes. When I say I am observing myself, what does this mean? What does this imply? I am not saying that this is impossible. There have been great sages, great saints, great yogis, etc., etc., who have had some kind of, you know, an inward resolution of this problem or dissolution of this problem. What is the I observing itself? But there is this problem in the life of a sincere seeker. It is easily possible for me to delude myself when it comes to observation of oneself . Who is there to examine? Who is there to check? Who is there to ensure that I am not bluffing myself? Is there a term of reference? Is there a landmark? Is there a guiding star or something? To which I can refer and say, I am all right, this is real meditation, this is not real meditation. It is there that someone other than myself becomes necessary. And therefore, this Upanishad said, Uttishtata, Jagrata, Prapya Varan Nibodata, Churasya Dhara, Nishita Duratya, Durgam Patastat Kavayo Vadanti. Uttishtata, Jagrata, Prapya Varan Nibodata, Uttishtata, wake up. Having woken up, be careful. It is as difficult to keep awake as to wake up. This is something which I can bear testimony in my own life. We used to, you know, in the early days of the ashram, we did not have an alarm clock and no such luxuries. And in summer, we used to sleep outside on the Ganges bank, the river bank. On the other side of the river, not very far, just across the road, the river is not very wide near our ashram, there is a temple. That temple used to open at 4 o'clock in the morning. Somebody would wake up and ring a bell. Ding. I don't know if you have seen, there are two gongs tuned slightly differently. It's a delightful music, ding 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 to announce the time, and then ding 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 ding. Right. When he strikes the gong 4 times, I am sleeping in the open. In summer, it's quite pleasant. My sleep is disturbed. I'm still lying down. Ding 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 ding. I said, all right, now 4 o'clock. I must get up. I must get up. There's 2 minutes. Turn on your side and lie down. Just 2 minutes. I'll get up just now before the bell stops, because it goes on for a few minutes. Ding 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 ding. I am still lying with closed eyes. It's 2 minutes. And then it's beautiful what the mind can do to us. There I am, standing in front of a beautiful temple, huge, colossal temple. And there is a beautiful moon, murti of Krishna, and the priest is waving lamp, ding 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 ding. Now, the whole thing has been converted into a dream, integrated and converted into a dream. The next thing, the sun is up, and the time is 6:30. It's remarkable. So, to wake up is not so difficult as to keep awake. Uttishtata, jagrata. That is what we discussed yesterday. Maturity. But the most vital element has not been touched at all. The eye that is awake. The eye that is awake. Is it awake as the eye? Or does it know how to examine itself? Probably not. Hence, the Rishi says, Prapya Varan Nibodhata. Go to the holy ones. Varan. The expression here is extremely simple. Sometimes we ourselves twist and turn and torture to suit our convenience. Luckily for me, I don't have a cult, a group, or an ashram, or a big institution to tempt you to join me. Otherwise, I would say, you must only go to a Swami. Uttishtata, arise, awake, and go to the feet of a Swami. I don't know, Swami. If you don't want Swami, go to a Salami. Easy. Take it easy. The word used here is extremely simple. Why must I distort it? Prapya Varan. Varan is one who is ahead of you on the path. A superior man. Or it can even mean one whom your heart chooses. One whom your heart chooses to follow. That is called Varan. Vara. Vara in a certain sense is even used for the boy that the girl chooses to marry. Even he is called Vara. The bridegroom, but not in the sense of a bridegroom, but in the sense of a boy whom a girl chooses. Prapya varan nibodata. It's so simple, isn't it? There is no magic involved here. There is no creation of an image involved here. Your heart adores this man and you feel he is the person who will guide you, enlighten you, go to him. Is that so simple? Should we not seek an enlightened guru? How on earth are you going to know who is enlightened? How on earth would you know who is enlightened? There is a little couplet in Sanskrit. Vidvaneva vijanati vidvajjana parishramam nahi vandya vijanati gurvim prasavvedana. The first line can be translated in the English proverb, only a Shakespeare can know a Shakespeare. The second line says, how does a barren woman know what labor pain means? She probably has some idea she was constipated and so on. There was trouble. What a ridiculous analogy. That's all I can do. What can I do? If this lady comes and describes to me what labor pain meant to her, I cannot even visualize it. I'm going to say, oh, I see it. Might have been something like this. Nahi vandya vijanati gurvim prasav vedana. How do I know? So, how do I know whether this gentleman has had enlightenment or not? He comes and tells me that he saw a brilliant light in his meditation. I have seen a brilliant light without meditation. I don't know if people play that game here. We used to have in our villages, Dr. Sahib, what is Danda Gulli, you know?
Yeah, I don't know how to translate it.
It is, I'll describe it to you. A man has a sort of baton like thing, a small stick, and a little one, a tiny one, and a slightly longer one, 1 foot long stick, and another one is just about that size, about a few inches. And he throws it in the air and hits it. After all, there are all sorts of things to be done. A few of us were playing this game in a small town where I was going to school. I was standing to the left of a young boy. He did this. He threw this small one into the air and hit it. He missed that one, but didn't miss my right eye. I don't know if you have ever experienced anything hitting your eye. The light that you see is fantastic. So what? May I accept that as self-realization? So that how will I know, how will you know who is a man of self-realization? Conduct. Do you know how a man of self-realization should behave? Who are you to fix the laws? You come and quote the Bhagavad Gita. Hey, here you are. It says a man of self-realization should be always, you know, on even keel and not subject to emotions and even-minded in pleasure and pain, even-minded in honor and dishonor, so that you can go on teasing him to your satisfaction. Why must I give you that satisfaction? I may deflate you also. Yeah, because the same scripture also says that a guru must twist his disciple's ears and take him up. Tell us, you are not in a hurry, I suppose, today. We'll have a little more time. I'll tell you some nice stories. Because heaven knows when I'll see you again. We had a conference in India about 3 or 4 years ago, Divine Life, All India Divine Life Conference, to which many eminent Swamis had been invited. Ooh, even to look at them was eminent. I don't know who they were, but even look at them made me feel that they are all super eminent. Oh, flowing robes and... One Swami had been allotted about 45 minutes to speak. He came a bit late. And he went on. About the time he was supposed to stop, the organizer passed a note on to him, "Your time is up." He flew into such a rage, everything there caught fire. So he started shouting at the organizer, shouting at there is another Swami who was presiding. He unfortunately dropped a tactless remark. He said, "But you came late, Swamiji." I turned to him and said, "Who? You are telling me I came late? The car that was sent to pick me up came too late. Huh? I was waiting for the car." Again, back to the organizer. And I was there, I suggested to the organizer, "Don't do anything. Please go and touch his feet and say, 'Pardon, forgive me, sorry.'" Eventually, he agreed. As soon as he bowed down, touched his face, "Swamiji, please forgive me." And he was cooled off. And went on with his talk, which is remarkable. Which is remarkable. I mean, I don't know if I would have been able to do that. After all this, commotion, emotion and commotion. Later, we were having lunch together and someone looked at him and remarked, "How is it that being a such a great Swami, you lost your temper?" He turned and I thought he was going to lose his temper again. He said, "Oh, only we should lose our temper. Huh? We are here to teach all these people. We are here to teach all these people. We only we can lose. You should not lose your temper." Huh? Is that right? You have come here to learn. Who should lose his temper? The teacher or the student? I am here to teach you how to behave. Okay. I looked at him. I said, "You may be perfectly right. Who am I to judge you?" One scripture says, a Swami or a holy man must be always, all the time, equanimous and, calm and blissful. Another scripture says that a holy man of self-realization might behave like Bala Unmatta Pishachavat. His behavior can be like a childlike. Unmatta, mad, like a madman. He may behave like a madman. Pishachavat, like a goblin. His behavior may be like that of a ghost. Who are you to decide? When you look at a holy man or a man of self-realization and start judging, you've gone back to the old problem of image making. You have an image in your mind that a holy man must be so and so, so and so. And if that holy man doesn't fit into your image, you are fooled. How do we know? Drop all this. I feel she is enlightened. I'll follow her. Can I not be misled by these charlatans? I don't know if you agree with me here. I am sincere. I am honest in this. I prefer to follow a selfish person rather than an unselfish person. You know why? A selfish person will certainly keep me unselfish. I prefer to keep company with a bully rather than with a soft-hearted gentleman, because the bully will keep me in my place and prevent me from slipping. If my head begins to swell a little bit, he will knock it into proper shape. Right? We are arguing, and counter-arguing, only because we have forgotten those two words, uttishtata jagrata, awake, arise and keep awake, keep alert. If I am awake and if I am alert, and if I am following a charlatan, I'll reach my destination . It is the ego again that tries to look for a perfect guru. Oh, I think I must have told some of you the story last time. Two girls had gone to the same school in England, I believe. One of them came of very wealthy family. She was the only daughter of a multimillionaire. And the other was a poor girl. They had both completed their life at the school and they were ready to part. Oh, they embraced each other, cried over each other's shoulders. And one asked the other, "Well, my dear, what are you going to do?" asked the millionaires of the poor girl. "What am I to do? I'll go home and mother wants me to get married. I'll get married. Then have children, lead a, you know, housewife's life. What about you? What do you want to do?" "Oh no, I'm not going to marry Tom, Dick and Harry." That's poetry, isn't it? "I'm not going to marry a Tom, Dick and Harry. I will only marry a perfect man." Very good. And they parted. 20 or 25 years later, this great lady, the millionaires, who had now inherited the entire fortune, the parents were dead, she was sitting somewhere on a railroad station, and this other lady was coming with a brood of 5 or 6 children behind her. One recognized the other. "Hello, hello. Aren't you so-and-so?" "Yes, I am so-and-so. What have you been doing? Look at this, 5 or 6 children. Can't you see what I have been doing?" And the poor lady asks the rich one, "What about you? Did you find your perfect man?" And she says, "Yes, of course." "Congratulations." "But no, What for? You said you found a perfect man, but I'm not married. I did find a perfect man, but I'm not married. Why? He was looking for a perfect woman. He was looking for a perfect woman. It is a waste of time. Total waste of time trying to see this guru may be better than that guru may be superior to this guru. Nonsense. If I am a perfect disciple, this glass of water is the perfect guru. And yet I need this guru. This is the danger. This is the problem. I am awake, I am alert, and yet I need an external somebody, something. Prapya varan nibodhata. I'm not sure whether the word varan can be interpreted as even an inanimate object. But perhaps anything, something in the world, something in the universe can bring about that enlightenment. The ego studying itself may not be able to reach it. Maybe. When we say may not. Or when we say may not, may. We are not precluding, we are not demanding that it shall be so. But it is safer to be so. It is said that a very great bond sage called Shukadeva, he was sent by his father to another sage to verify. The father was called Vyasa. Vyasa, who compiled all the epics and the Puranas and so on, the legends and so on in Sanskrit. His son, it is said, was born perfect, enlightened. And when this son came of age, 7 or 8 or whatever it is, he told his son, go and learn from a king who was also an enlightened being, Janaka. This young man, he said, yes, father. He went to the palace of this king. He stood there. The king was inside. He knew who had come. He told his soldiers, keep him there. Ask him to wait. And he was waiting. Then the king instructed all his attendants, whoever was clearing the palace of garbage, take all the garbage and throw on that man's head. Just to see if he's all right. Throw it on that man's head. And they spat on him, they did all sorts of monkey tricks with him. He stood there, because my guru had asked me to stay here, na? Isn't that what he said? My guru said, stay here, I am staying here. And my guru didn't say that if somebody threw garbage, hit him back. No, so I won't do it. My job is to just stay put. For a few days he did that. And the guru upstairs decided that the time had come to play another drama. So he called him in. Bring him in. And Shuka was brought in. He was given a royal apartment. He was bathed in perfume, etc., etc. Given royal robes. He put on everything. Yeah. Because they said that your guru wants you to wear this. He wore all this. And he said, all right, I am waiting for the guru. In the meantime, some girls danced and, sang and did all sorts of things. He said, no, my guru didn't ask me to do any of these things. So I let the girls dance, let the girl be naked and do what they like. My guru said, I'll wait here. I won't run away from them. I am not interested in them at all because my guru asked me to wait here. Yeah, that's quite simple. And eventually,
After having passed both these tests, he was ushered into the Guru's presence. And King Janaka said, what do you want? Get out. He said, you already reached far higher than I have got. Go. And he said, thank you very much, walked out. The problem here is, who is going to study your ego? You? You think you can? Up to this point, everything is clear, beautiful. But here comes a troublesome factor. Who is going to study my ego? I'm humble. I go and touch everybody's feet and wash everybody's... Doesn't that doormat do that job better? Huh? Shall we then pick up the doormat and put it there? Oh Bhagawan, Guru Maharaj. No? Haven't you seen people who profess or show themselves to be so humble that they are the proudest people on earth? Inwardly? What does your heart say? Can you look within? And if you look within and pat yourself, I am very humble, you know, I am reasonably pure and I am very humble. Who says that? Who says that? Yourself, no? Huh? Aren't you a clever chap? Even when you accuse yourself, watch. This is something very interesting, if you are able to watch yourself. Even when you accuse yourself and go into the confessional and say, oh Father, you know, I am a sinner. Please say, I am alright. Oh Father, I am a heinous sinner. I committed all carnals. Please say that you are, I am alright. What a wretched, hypocritical state. And if you think you are not hypocritical, that is crime number two. Because, as in the case of law, ignorance of law is no excuse. If you say, I was not aware that I am hypocritical, that only means that you are a hypocrite plus ignorant. Therefore, they said, Prapya varan nibodata. Go to somebody. Go. Krishna underlines this teaching in the Gita and says, Tad viddhi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tattvadarshinaha. Go to these great ones. Surrender yourself to them. Do I know when I have surrendered? They will make sure of that. You don't have to bother. They know how to do that. Twist you and turn you and pull you around. Because, to come back to the Upanishad, Churasya dhara nishida aturatya turgam patastat kavyo vadanti. The path is like the razor's edge. Razor's edge, not because it will cut your foot. That's silly. Doesn't matter. I've got band-aid. That's no problem at all. It is so sharp, so fine, so subtle, you don't see it. When you think you see it, you have missed it. The moment I see, oh my God, it's gone. It's gone. It is like in the nuclear physicist's parlance, it is like the individual electron. The moment you think you have seen, it's gone. You have missed it. I must have told this
before. A barber taught me this lesson. A barber in Rishikesh, he taught me this lesson. He used to shave us, and he has shaven only Swami's heads. And I used to look upon him with great veneration. You know why? All the world, everybody in the world who goes to Rishikesh and these places, bow down to these Swamis, holy men. And the holy men bow down to the barber. They have to do this. They can't afford to do. Come on, shave. No. So he enjoyed a unique position, this barber. And he was an expert. I used to be sitting on a veranda and doing some work, reading or typing or diving. And he would come and say, Swamiji, are you ready today? I might tell him, yes, yes, but I would like to finish this work. Oh, doesn't matter. You sit there and carry on with your work. He will sit beside me, apply some water, soap, finished. You may not even know that something has happened. Such perfect barber. One day he was doing his job and he stopped and asked me, does it hurt you? I thought within myself, it's not as smooth as usual. And looked at him and asked him, how did you know that it might have hurt me? I wanted to know if I grimaced or winced, you know, involuntarily. And he held up the razor in front of me and he said, can you see? I said, yes, I can see the edge. That's the point. That's why. I thought it might hurt you. And then he sharpened it a little further. Then he held it up again. Can you see? No. Now. It's perfect. Razor's edge means the path that you cannot see. The middle path that you cannot see. Can you see any middle path at all? Can you actually point out to me the middle of the road here? That's simple, isn't it? A point is in mathematics. A point has no dimensions. Can you draw a point which has no dimensions at all? Use the sharpest writing instrument you have. Put the small, minutest dot on a piece of paper, I can still magnify it. If a thing has no dimension at all, can you see it? If you are able to see it, can you assert that it has no dimension? The razor's edge is the path that you cannot see. Just like Kierkegaard's either or, here the formula is neither nor. Can I see that? Can I see it's neither this nor that, neither this nor that, neither this nor that, all the time? Must I sit and meditate? No! Must I go about doing my job? No! Then what do you want me to do? Ah, that's the point. Keep awake. Keep awake. Must I go and bowing down to everybody? Then it becomes routine, mechanical. And the ego makes use of that mechanical activity to defeat your purpose. Anything mechanically done loses its value because it becomes an instrument in the hands of the ego. Then, if I am not going to do anything mechanically at all, well, all right, that means I will make a routine of a non-routine. Today I will get up at 6 o'clock, tomorrow I will get up at 7, day after tomorrow I will get up at 5, and the fourth day I will get up at 4. You have made a routine of non-routine.
In other words, you are going to come and tell me, you know, Swami, I follow exactly what you said. I don't make anything routine. That is another routine. The ego is again making use of your non-routine to do its trick. Is it clear? Whatever you do, now for instance, we started, the young people here started a new thing of growing a beard and growing long hair and so on. All right, everybody will join. Okay, then you can't distinguish yourself. Right? In another 30 or 40 years, everybody will have long hairs and everybody will have a long beard. Well, lovely. Then what happens? Huh? It will become like a pilgrim went to a seaside pilgrim center. He had a small bag of some precious things and money and so on, his purse and so on. He was alone and there was this big crowd there. He didn't want to lose his purse. Where to hide it when he went into the water to bathe? So when nobody was looking, he quietly dug a small pit in the sand, dropped his purse, stand and looked around. Nobody looked. Very good. Then he filled up the pit. Now the problem is how to find the pit once the bathing is over. And so he looked around, he found a small stone. He brought that stone, put it on top of that. Fortunately or unfortunately, that action had been watched and noticed by a few people who were coming behind. So they thought that that is the custom here, that you must scoop up a small piece of, a little bit of sand and put this stone on top. So this fellow had gone for his bath. When he came back, he found 1,000 stones. So whatever you do, even if you do something out of the ordinary, something which is not routine, even that becomes routine. A non-routine becomes a routine. And your ego is tempted to say, of course. If I don't smoke, my ego says, I don't smoke at all. If I smoke, my ego says, I can smoke and yet attain satori. Huh? If I am not married, I say, I am very pure, strict, etc. If I am married 10 times, I say, none of these things affects me, I am so great. Whatever you do, you are caught. Neither nor. It is neither this nor that, neither this nor that, neither this nor that. And only a guru is able to slap you this way, slap you that way, slap you this way, slap you that way, slap you this way, slap you that way, constantly. And when you keep like this, neither this nor that, neither this nor that, it's gone. And that experience is neither enlightenment nor delusion, neither good nor evil, neither this nor that.
सुगंधिं पुष्टिवर्धनं उर्वारुकमिवबन्धनान् मृत्योर्मुखीय मां तात् ॐ त्र्यम्बकं यजामहे सुगंधिं पुष्टिवर्धनं उर्वारुकमिवबन्धनान् मृत्योर्मुखीय मां तात् ॐ त्र्यम्बकं यजामहे सुगंधिं पुष्टिवर्धनं उर्वारुकमिवबन्धनान् मृत्योर्मुखीय मां तात् सर्वेषां स्वस्ति भवतु सर्वेषां शान्तिर्भवतु सर्वेषां पूर्णं भवतु सर्वेषां मङ्गलं भवतु सर्वे भवन्तु सुखिनः सर्वे सन्तु निरामया सर्वे भद्राणि पश्यन्तु मा कश्चित् दुःखभाग् भवेत् असतो मा सद्गमय तमसो मा ज्योतिर्गमय मृत्योर्मा अमृतं गमय ॐ पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ओ अडोरबल् लॉर्ड ऑफ मर्सी एंड लव सैल्यूटेशन्स एंड प्रोस्ट्रेशन्स टू दी The word omnipresent, omnipotent and omniscient, the word Satchidananda, the word existence, knowledge, bliss, absolute, the word indweller of all beings, grant us an understanding heart, equal vision, balanced mind, faith, devotion and wisdom, grant us inner spiritual strength, resist temptations and to control the mind, lust, greed, anger, hatred and jealousy, bless our hearts with divine virtues, let us behold thee in all these names and forms. Let us serve thee in all these names and forms. Let us ever remember thee. Let us ever sing thy glories. Let thy name be ever on our lips. Let us abide in thee forever.